Hello, everybody. Josh Brown here, back for another great episode on Franchise Euphoria. Well, today's episode is brought to you by IndieFranchiseLaw.com, a leading resource in the franchise space to help you if you're considering buying a franchise, turning your business into a franchise, or growing your business through a licensing or franchise structure. So go on, check it out, IndieFranchiseLaw.com. I think you'll find a lot of valuable and free information as you continue to kind of weigh franchising and licensing and the growth of your business. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's episode. On today's episode of Franchise Euphoria, I've got on Roger Lewis, who's the CEO of CMIT Solutions. CMIT is a leading provider of information technology professional services and products to small and mid-market businesses, and is capable of supporting businesses anywhere coast to coast in the United States and Canada. They focus on local and trust-based relationships. They're a franchise with over 230 locations. Roger is the CEO of CMIT, and before joining CMIT Solutions, Roger founded Alliance Tech, a meeting and events technology provider of on-site solutions. There, he led sales and marketing, taking the business from zero to 12 million plus in bookings. In 2015, industry leader Cvent took notice and acquired the company, adding on-site solutions to its product portfolio. Under Cvent, Lewis continued to propel the business forward with on-site solutions, proving it to be one of the fastest growing product lines of the company. Prior to Alliance Tech, Lewis co-founded an IT services company and successfully grew it to $8 million in annual sales before selling it to an organization out of New York. This is a great interview with Roger. We talk about really the timely concept of IT solutions for small businesses during COVID-19 and just in general with the tech-savvy world that we are in right now. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this interview with Roger Lewis. Hello, Roger. Welcome to Franchise Euphoria. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well.
You're hanging in there amidst COVID-19.
Yes. We're probably one of the few franchises out there that's actually surviving the COVID-19 crisis pretty well.
Yep. You're an IT support franchise, which, you know, given the remote nature of everything, your business and the business of your franchisees is probably pretty busy right now.
Yeah. So whether you're, you know, we're very fortunate that IT infrastructure is important to a business, whether they're running it from their home or running out of their office. And so for us, we're one of the few businesses, as many of the small businesses transition from a all in the office to a all at home or a hybrid model, that our work increased to help with that transition and also created a few opportunities. So in that respect, that considering how unemployment's been going up every week, we've been very blessed to have minimally impacted by everything that's going on.
Well, you know, it's not every day I have on or speak to somebody who's part of an IT support franchise. So I'm happy to have you on because I think I'm excited to learn and hear you tell about the model and the business and how it developed. But before we dive into that, tell us a little bit about you and sort of how you, your background and how you got involved with CMIT.
Oh, sure. So I started my career with IBM out of college, and actually my first job at IBM, I was assigned as a contractor working for NASA at Johnson Space Center. And those were very, very fun days. I was part of the IBM's Federal Systems Division, and so I was involved with the space program for almost about 10 years before I switched over with IBM and became part of the more commercial side. And those were some good times, a great learning experience with IBM. Shortly after I moved to Austin, a group of us left and started a business. And we became, I don't want to say serial entrepreneurs, but we started a couple of businesses together, one in IT and it did well, another one in software as a service. And it was shortly after I had sold my software as a service business, which was in the event space, that CMIT, a board member from some CMIT who happened to be on our board for a while too, reached out to me to see if I'd be interested in running the company. And I had, you know, a lot of experience growing businesses, and they were looking for someone who could bring that experience to the forefront for the franchise. And also had experience in technology. And after spending some time with the prior CEO Jeff and the board interviewing. I was really touched by a lot of the stories and the journeys that these franchises were on, and accepted the role here, and what's brought me here today.
So tell me a little bit about what do you guys do? The underlying services, obviously you're providing IT support for businesses, just general businesses, or what is the sector that you guys support?
Yeah, so we focus on really the 5 to 500. Our mission statement, again, a 10,000 foot view, is to empower the world's small and medium sized businesses by providing innovative technology solutions and manage IT services. But at the end of the day, really what we do for our clients is we let our clients be able to focus on running their business and growing their business. So while we provide all their IT infrastructure and support and doing our best to make sure they're safe and secure environments. So we allow small businesses to focus on what they do best while we focus on what we do best.
And you guys have what, over 220 or more locations at this point?
We just launched, literally had 5 graduates last week. And so I think we're up to 235 plus, just rounding off franchise and territories. So yeah, we're doing quite well.
And so tell me a little bit about the model. I mean, is this a home-based type model? I mean, where the franchisee either can do a lot of the IT services, at least at the start themselves, and then can bring on people as desired, or is there a retail component to it?
Yeah, great question. So we are a franchise business that you can actually start out of your home office. As a matter of fact, we encourage that because nowadays with the web and the IT infrastructure, there's no need to really open an office day one, right? So day one, really what's important is selling and sales and marketing and our marketing playbooks and success wheels and getting out and meeting clients. And once you're getting some clients, again, a lot of that servicing them is nowadays done remote. Even our help desk offering they call into, we can remotely take over computers, desktops, and service them. It's not a business that requires a brick and mortar day one. And some of it, even our larger franchises still don't have one, you know, who've been in business 5 or plus years. So that's one thing great. You know, it's relatively low capital to start it off. It's a reoccurring, repeatable business model. So you have a reoccurring revenue structure.
Yeah, I mean, is it just, so it's a monthly fee that the customers of the franchise are going to be paying for the services? Is that how it works? How does that work with, if I'm a customer of yours and you're coming in, are you charging a flat monthly fee and then perhaps some additional amount depending on, you know, additional services or if there's emergencies or anything like that?
Sure. It's a fee per seat, and a seat would be like a computer. So it almost works out almost a per user fee, but essentially it's like a per device fee. So every computer, again, we install proactive security software on, we do remote monitoring management. It's very common for us to be managing the firewall also. And so it's like a per seat charge, as we call it, very similar to like a Microsoft Office situation. So
that's nice.
Yeah. So again, it's usually depending on how many employees you have. Let's say if they all have one computer, and let's say if you have a server in the back room and our network switches. Our kind of motto is like, if it beeps or blinks, we manage it, right? Manage it
and support it. Hopefully it's not beeping or blinking. Well, at least from the consumer side, but I guess from your side, that's okay because right. You'll come and fix it. Sure. So that's interesting. So what type of franchisees do you look for? I mean, what kind of folks do you look for? Is it recommended that they have a tech background or more of a sales background? I mean, I got to imagine maybe both might be preferable, but I'm just curious, as you know, you launch and you get people in these different locales, they need to be able to go talk to these businesses and sell them on the services.
Yeah, that's a great question, because a lot of times assume, since we're in the IT space, that someone to qualify to be a candidate has to have a strong IT background. And that's simply not the case. As a matter of fact, some of our fastest growing franchises are guys who came from corporate America who had sales and marketing backgrounds. And so we have a wide diverse of background history of our different franchises in the system. It doesn't require IT knowledge. We will train you, and then we have alliance partners and sales engineers and service delivery personnel to help educate you on the product set. It's certainly beneficial, though, if you have some knowledge of IT. But I would say, if I was going to pick a skill from day one, certainly if we came from a corporate America background, You had experience in selling and maybe marketing. Those are all pluses. But an IT service background is not required.
You know, in terms of how you break up the territories, I know one thing that's probably curious, you probably get this question a lot. I mean, when you've got a service-based model like this, do you guys break up locations by zip codes, by population count? How do you divide up a territory to know where you're going to place your franchisees and have them have access to a big enough geographic area to build their business?
Yeah, what we have found is roughly 3,000 to 4,000 small businesses make up a great territory. And then we divide that by zip code. So we look for a set of zip code ranges that represent roughly 3,000 to 4,000 for one territory. That's worked out really well for us from the number of businesses. A lot of people don't realize that 99% of all commerce being done is done by small businesses. And so, you know, a lot of people think it's all the big businesses, but really it's all the small businesses represent a large percent of, especially IT spending.
Well, that makes good sense, right? I mean, if you're going to do it by the number of businesses there, then people should have enough opportunity to go get them. I'm curious, you know, it's interesting. We talked about this at the outset a little bit, but did you come up with the idea to franchise or who came up with the idea to franchise this model? Because, you know, it's not every day you see IT companies that are franchised. I love the idea of franchising it because it does have a recurring base model, and it's obviously it's a differentiator to have sort of, you know, your tech company there local, you know, to be servicing those local support as opposed to, you know, somebody having to make a call and go to a call center and all that stuff. But whose idea was it to franchise the model?
Yeah, so way back in 1999, CMIT was actually started from computer moms. So back then, the CM was for computer moms.
That's funny. I was going to ask you what that stood for, because I didn't know what the M stood for.
Today it stands for computer monitoring, but back then it started for computer moms. And back then when you had Geek Squads and some of these other organizations popping up, focused on, you know, IT support, it popped up and it was focused on residential and mostly residential break fix. Right. So it wasn't really until like 2002, 2003 timeframe where they transitioned into helping assisting the small and medium sized business. And then I would say roughly around 2007, even though they had been franchising earlier, in 2007, that's when they had a big leap in the number of franchises. And that's when they focused on proactive IT help and support and help desk and backup recovery. And since then, that's the time that I think they've really been starting to grow over and over. And that's kind of when I'd say the managed service provider business model, really, that's when it took off.
And so do you guys, I mean, like, for instance, then right now, as we talked about, you know, at the outset as well, I mean, I got to think you're probably getting a lot of calls, or your franchisees are probably getting a lot of calls of how can we take our IT and go remote? If they haven't already been set up that way, I'm curious, do you guys set people up from the outset to be remote? But then number two, what's that been like for folks who weren't set up to then try to quickly get them set up so that they could have their people working remotely to the extent they were businesses that could do that?
Yeah. So with the cloud, that certainly has made things a little bit easier, things in the cloud today to be able to access your file, maybe your email. The problem is with these businesses, when they're a hybrid, like maybe go from the office to the home quickly, what you can't have happen is people on their home machines who may have them not so well protective against antivirus and malware and ransomware. You don't want those home machines to pollute your office network, right, and introduce ransomware into your office network. So not only now you're dealing with a pandemic, but now you're dealing with a ransomware crisis, right? So there were a number.
So how do you protect against that?
It's a lot of different ways. So one way is what's called virtual desktops. And so there's an offering where we can virtual desktop into the office network.
Yeah, but that's slow. So I love this topic, by the way. So I get excited. I really do, because I'm set up to do remote, and I'm a lawyer and a partner in a firm, but some of my partners are not set up the way that I am. So I can easily work remotely. But here's my question on the remoting it. You're talking about from your home computer, basically remoting in through like a log me in or remote PC or something like that. But right, is that what you're talking about?
No, it's a little different.
Okay, what is it? Okay, a VPN or something?
If you've heard, no, VPN is a way to go in. So let's just talk maybe about some of these ways that are happening. Yeah. One way is, so the virtual desktop is more VDI, and it spins up almost like a brand new computer for you instantly, right? It has like an image of a brand new computer. So you're not taking over your work computer. It's a very small, quick desktop that's spun up, and it places you on almost like you were a new machine being placed on your work network, right? And Citrix has an offering here, Microsoft, and there's several, you know, big players in this space. Even Google does this a little bit, I'd say, with their Chromebooks, right? A lot of the stuff isn't on the Chromebook itself. It spins up and connects to the cloud to access data. And so that's one way, is that virtual desktop. A second approach is like what you said, the problem with VPN in is you don't want people to VPN in unless their home machine's protective. And this is another, again, a big area of why when the virus broke out, we had work to do, because we had to come in and install protections on these home machines, right? So that they had, you know, antivirus, any spyware, DNS filtering, SIMSOC protection on their home machine. So they were just as safe as a work machine. So when they did VPN into the network, the same security they had on the office network existed on the home machine. So that's the second option you kind of have to that.
Which is not a great option, right? Like you said, because if you're remoting in, I mean, first of all, it's really slow. But second of all, to your point is, if somebody gets into your system, now they're into the system that you're remoted into, which is what you want to protect against, right?
Right. But a lot of these SIMSOCs that are out there will detect against that. So it's a little bit slower because you're from home. But I'd say the security measures, though, are really good. SIMSOCs, you know, again, you have a SOC monitoring for intrusion detection. And so with that penetration test and that, you're pretty safe in that type of environment, maybe a little bit slower. And then the last is when people have moved a lot to the cloud, for instance, whether they move to Box from a file, you know, file point of view, or they move to Ignite file server. And I apologize, I hear my dog in the background here.
Hey, there's no apologies. Trust me, I've done podcasts now of late from working at home where I've had construction going on in the background. I've had kids going, so no worries.
But the third is when you have the cloud, right? Then a lot of your stuff is safe behind the cloud. And you see more and more people moving their servers to the cloud. You see more and more people moving, you know, all their file systems to the cloud. We use Ignite, which is, again, a great cloud file-based server, very, very secure, encryption. And so that makes it a little bit easier, because now you're not having to access your office network to get to the files you're working with every day at work, because they are in the cloud. And those are really the three ways we saw people migrate or set up hybrid environments between the office and working at home.
And then if you have people, I'll just use my, you know, like at our office, we have staff and so forth that are working from home. And to the extent that they can get onto the cloud and do that, if something, you know, were to happen or otherwise, you could literally just go in and change the passwords and you've got the cloud backed up umpteen different ways. And so that would be the way around sort of those issues, right?
Correct. And like I said, it really depends on the business. Like, we're working with small businesses, everything from doctor's offices, right? So they have to have their appointment systems and access to those type of things. But a lot of these doctors nowadays are taking virtual appointments, right? You're not going into the office to do it. So they're doing via Zoom meeting, which has also been an important component, making sure a lot of our small businesses have a video conferencing, whether that's through Microsoft Teams, through Zoom, you know, go to meetings is also.
Which do you like the best? I mean, I know we're on Office 365 and Teams, but I also have an account with Zoom and I like both of them. I'm just curious from your perspective, from a security perspective, and just from a functionality perspective, which one of the video chat services do you think is the best?
Well, it's interesting you say that. I mean, look, Zoom probably gets recognized for its how easy it is to use. But as I'm sure you heard, there was a security flaw and you had people dropping in on meetings. Especially.
I know, I heard that.
So
did they fix that?
They did. They have addressed that. GoToMeetings is also a great product. And that didn't have the same security vulnerabilities. It's very, very easy to use. A lot of people are using it. And so I'd put those as one and two. People are using Microsoft Teams in droves also just because it tends to come with Office, right? So if you have Microsoft Office, which most of us do, you tend to have Teams also. I'd say those were probably the three most popular ones. Maybe you could put Google in there too.
What about Citrus, the Citrus WebEx program?
WebEx? Yeah, that's actually offered, you know, now Cisco owns those guys.
I'm sorry, Cisco, not Citrus. Cisco, yeah.
Yeah, so Cisco owns those guys. And those, I'd probably put them as a fourth. Certainly, they were king of the hill a while back ago. But I haven't seen them as much as in the SMB space. I imagine in the enterprise space, they're still really, really big.
Well, and I'm curious, like for a business like yours, you know, when you're working with small business, probably one of the things that you're dealing with is this idea of a business trying to make the decision, you know, do I need sort of outsourced IT? At what point does a business need to really start considering that as opposed to just trying to piecemeal stuff together and do it themselves?
I encourage it from very early on, mostly because in starting a business, right, as a business owner, you need to have accounting, right? You need to have understanding of HR. You need to have understanding of how you're going to market yourself, how you're going to sell, right? How you're going to deliver whatever services you're delivering. The last thing you want to do is also become an IT specialist too, right? To protect yourself from all the ransomware attacks and security vulnerabilities. And so, you know, we deal with small businesses, small as three or four people, right? Very, very small, up to, we like to say 5 to 500 is kind of our sweet spot. But I encourage it from day one because there's only so much you can do as a small business owner, right? There's only so much you can understand. And usually these small business owners want to be focused on how do I get more customers? How do I market myself better? How do I grow myself better? The IT infrastructure should almost be invisible to them, right? It's a way they maybe do their e-commerce, or it's a back-end thing that you want them thinking about as little as possible. You want them focused on growing their business. So we encourage it as early on. Again, it's a relatively minor expense compared to a lot of the other expenses they have with running a small business. So usually the earlier, the better.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think especially in this day and age, everything is in the cloud. Everything is internet-based, and you need to protect that. I'm curious, just as sort of a last topic, you know, cyber liability insurance and cyber liability obviously plays a role in the business you guys are in. I'm curious, I imagine you probably, and your franchisees probably, do you guys work with insurance companies in terms of, you know, with their cyber liability policies and being able to go back in when people make claims on those policies and so forth, and being able to see, you know, what's happened to people's systems and what the damage has been?
I would say more from our guys take out cybersecurity insurance just because it's a smart thing to have as a franchisee. So I would say from that perspective, they do. Look, the reason why this whole cybersecurity has become such a big threat is if you recall, maybe I'd say 10 years ago, you would only hear about these cybersecurity breaches and ransomware on the large enterprise companies, like, you know, really, really big names like Target or Home Depot. And you'd hear about their big break-ins and how they were hacked. But nowadays, look, these hackers are focused on the small and medium businesses because a lot of times they go in and they find them, they're not protected very well at all, right? And they can come in and, you know, get, let's say, the average, I think, ransomware request I saw in a small business is between 15 and 25,000, and since they're so easy to get into, right, they've been focusing their intentions there. And so, not from an insurance point of view aside, but from a cybersecurity, which a lot of times involves what we call a SIM and a SOC, there's been a big focus on upping that security layer for small businesses so they're protected and they don't have to worry about that.
Well, I think what you guys are offering is great service, great product. And I thank you, Roger, for coming on and speaking about it. If anybody wants to learn more about CMIT, you can go to cmitsolutions.com. That's CM as in Mary, itsolutions.com. You can also go to LinkedIn, find them on LinkedIn, and I imagine other social media sites as well. But thank you, Roger, for coming on. Like I said, there's probably not a better time in our history for a service like CMIT offers, and I imagine demand is just going to continue to grow as the internet and the worldwide economy continues to expand. Of course, once we get over COVID, eventually at some point.
Yeah, so I would add one more website if you're interested in opening a franchisee. There's cmitfranchise.com.
Perfect.
Please reach out. We'd be glad to speak with you. And like I said, we were very blessed to be one of the few businesses. I actually just pulled the data from the middle of the storm, from middle of March to the middle of April, and we're up just under 1,000 endpoints. That's, you know, we're one of the very few businesses growing during COVID-19.
Well, and you're doing important stuff because people do need to be protected. People are working on sensitive things. People have client information. They have customer information. And at a baseline level, just the idea of just the headache that it is for people to have to try to deal with different technologies, both, you know, it's one thing what you have set up at the office, but then getting yourself set up on the home front. So thank you guys for helping with that. I wish you had nothing but the best of luck in the future.
Oh, and thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of Franchise Euphoria. If you enjoyed this episode or have enjoyed the podcast in general, I would really appreciate it if you could go to iTunes and leave me a rating and review. It really helps to get this podcast out to more and more people. So the easy way to do it is go to iTunes and in the search box, put in Franchise Euphoria. You will then see my cover art and you click on my smiling face that says Franchise Euphoria and then click on the link that says ratings and reviews. It's that simple, but boy, oh boy, does it mean the world to me when people leave ratings and reviews. And like I said, it really helps get the show out there. Once again, would love it if you would go to iTunes and leave a rating and review if you enjoyed this episode or other episodes of the show. And until the next time, happy franchising.